Follow me down this deep, dark hole.
Welcome to New Horror Express, your fortnightly podcast chatting to the best indie talent the horror genre has to offer, as brought to you by the Morbidly Beautiful Network. I'm your host, Scott Murphy, and on today's show, I'm chatting to writer-director Jesse Blanchard about his new movie, Frank and Zed, which might just be the goriest movie involving puppets ever made. Over the course of the interview, I chat to Jesse about the epic six-year journey to bring this passion project to screens and the biggest challenges on that journey. We also talk extensively about the effects in the film, particularly the gore effects, and the notoriously tricky balance of finding the right horror-to-comedy ratio when making a comedy horror, all of which, and much, much more, you can hear right now in my interview with Jesse.
Hi, Jesse. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. It's good to have you on. So we have you on to talk about your film, Frank and Zed. So for the audience, can you first of all give a brief spoiler-free synopsis of Frank and Zed?
Absolutely. Frank and Zed is an all-puppet horror film that hopefully doesn't suck. So, I mean, that's what I say. It's like, all right, it's an all-puppet horror film that, and most people should be scared about that. Maybe a little bit. If you're a horror fan, maybe you're a little bit excited, but I tried to make one that would actually kind of live up to the premise. So that was the goal. Of course, whether or not I achieve that is up to whoever watches it, but it's a story about these two guys, kind of a Frankenstein's monster and a zombie that depend on each other for survival. And they've been kind of forgotten in the ruins of this castle for a couple hundred years. And then of course, one day those nefarious humans show up and they're not going to just let these poor guys be. So that's kind of basically the story. It's these two monsters and how they're going to confront this bloodthirsty mob and a bit of how they got to be where they are as well.
And so where did the initial idea for the film come from?
You know, it came to me while I was actually swimming. And I think one of the things that was kind of interesting just about that setup is I was in the pool and I didn't want to get out and I couldn't write. So I was just kind of swimming and kind of doing laps. And I don't know why it kind of came to me then, but it did. And I think perhaps because I was kind of stuck in that pool for a while, I managed to figure out like a whole bunch of the story in that first little bit about, you know, this Frankenstein monster. And I knew that he was going to have kind of a glass dome over his brain and that there would be this zombie guy and that the zombie would hook Frank up to charge each night and kind of chew on the glass dome, like a dog kind of chewing on a bone. And that the Frankenstein monster would get brains for the zombie. So all of that kind of showed up in that first big flash of inspiration. But I mean, as far as like coming from somewhere, it just happened. It bubbled up from the subconscious.
Cool. And so I'm not quite sure because the screener that I got said it took 6 years to make. I read somewhere else it took 7 years to make. Somewhere in between then, I suppose. Obviously, there's a lot of different challenges. You made the puppets. There was two Kickstarter campaigns. What would you say was the biggest challenge in the 6-7 year journey to make this film?
That's a great question. Honestly, the biggest challenge was balancing the story. One of the things that I really underestimated was just how visually rich the film would be and how that would kind of distract people and finding a place to keep the story really interesting and exciting and engaging without being confusing. And that over all the physical challenges and just kind of the how to do this or how to do that, kind of probably the sexier answers to your questions, you know, that was honestly one of the biggest challenges. In terms of actually, you know, building the puppets and kind of bringing things to life, one of the things I'm most happy with was the, you know, in the film, I always wanted to make it as real as possible. and to do the effects as real as possible. And so one of the things that happened is the story called for this god of death. And so trying to figure out how to make a god of death as a puppet that was all practical and that didn't look so stupid and wasn't just laughably bad, that was a real challenge. And it took a couple weeks to just figure that guy out, you know, for something that ends up being maybe 2.5, maybe 3 seconds of footage. But I'm really happy with how we managed to tackle the god of death. So I'd say, you know, one of the real answers is just getting in there and kind of working on it kind of day after day for 6 hours. That in a lot of ways is the biggest challenge, you know, and balancing the story. And then there's lots of like kind of every little shot and every little thing you're trying to do every day is a challenge in and of itself. So I don't know, kind of many, I guess. Yeah. Even coming up with one challenge, I was like, oh God, I'm going to need to see a therapist after that question.
Oh, I don't want to be the catalyst for that. I'm telling you.
All your fault. I have no culpability in making the film. I blame it all on you, Scott.
Oh, no.
What happened to Jesse? Well, you know, it's nothing to do with Frank and Zed. He did this interview with Scott Murphy, though. And oh, man, that guy.
He brought up some stuff to the surface. And yeah, exactly. It was just
the touch.
I never thought New Horror Express had this sort of power. I didn't realize the power I was wielding with these questions. Right. I'll be more careful in the future, Jesse.
right to the therapist couch. That's the Express.
Oh dear. When you were saying about balancing the story, obviously it is a horror comedy, and you know, quite often that is a difficult balance. Like most, there's getting a horror comedy right is great, but like a lot of horror comedies, maybe the majority, like they aren't scary, they aren't funny. And you're balancing kind of different stuff for sure. You know, there's some emotional stuff, there's some proper gory stuff, and there's, you know, like a lot of laughs as well.
Yeah, well, we just, you know, yeah, with this film, I think in terms of like the tone and the story and stuff, I actually felt we were just kind of making the film for ourselves, I think. Mm-hmm. And one of the things we really wanted to do is like, I'm like a total softy at heart and wanted something that was like really kind of very sweet and, you know, kind of wears its heart on its sleeve. And all the funny stuff were just things that we just thought were funny, you know, and we had I had a saying at least, you know, which was the perfect amount of dumb, because you would do things and there would be things that were just stupid at just the right level to be really funny to me. But that's what, like, we'd always find on set, like when you finally got it and it was just, I don't know, there was something about it. But I've been really surprised that one of the reactions that's been really exciting is to hear people talk about the tone and how they kind of enjoy the world and the characters. Mm-hmm. Because we weren't aiming at anything. It's just always is what felt right to us. Yeah. And there's lots of things where things that would kind of feel wrong, you know. Mm-hmm. Like a good example is, when the girl, there's kind of like a young woman and she has to run off into the forest, and having her run off into the forest because of some guy, just, I was like, that's so stupid. That's wrong. It's not funny. You know, it's like, and so I was trying to think of a reason for this young character to like go off into the woods. And I was like, oh, I know, if she's going to go off into the really scary, like murder woods, you know, what if she thinks like maybe she's going to get a croissant or a chocolate muffin, like some sort of treat, and she's really hungry, that's kind of funny. Yeah, like the thing that she would like go after there, you know, go out into the woods after some guy, that is not funny. But that she would like risk her life because she's like, I think that I could get a chocolate croissant out of this. All of a sudden that's like dumb in a way that's like funny.
Yeah.
And I spent a lot of time trying to figure out what would get her out in the woods that wasn't just some guy. But I'm really happy with it. And that was, again, it was more about like what was wrong. I was like, man, if she's just going after some guy, like any of the women in the audience are going to be like, are going to roll their eyes. It's going to take them out of the movie, you know, because she just becomes dumb. But if she's like really stupid for sweets, that is something I can identify with.
I can identify with that as well.
Exactly. It makes her like more real. And it's so stupid that she would go out into this like crazy horrific woods just to get a croissant, but it's funny, you know? So that's an example of like kind of the perfect amount of dumb.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. There was definitely some, there was definitely a few moments that really made me laugh out loud. I think.
Oh yeah. Okay.
One of my favorites is the guy who, like, you know, towards the end. I'm not going to spoil it. I'm going to spoil this one moment of the final battle, but like, I won't spoil much. There's a guy who gets his arms ripped off. And he gets one arm ripped off and he goes, no, my favorite arm. And then he gets his other arm ripped off and he goes, no, my other favorite arm. And I just, it just really tickled me. And then he's just, the blood is just spurting everywhere. And he's like, oh, my beautiful arms. The pride that guy had in his arms. It was, I loved it.
Oh, good. Well, and you can see that is a moment that's just the perfect amount of dumb. It's so stupid, right? And why is it funny? I don't know. You know, it's just so, yeah, I love that part. And that was actually part of what happened there was a real practical reason where there was so much going on. It was just like a little confusing, you know? Mm-hmm. So in the voiceover, I had the actor, I was like, just say everything that's happening. Just tell the audience like the damage that is happening, you know, the injuries.
Yeah.
And so all of that came out of like needing to solve that problem. And it makes that thing so much funnier. And you know, you also know what's happening because he's screaming at you exactly what's happening.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm glad you liked that part. That's a fun part.
I really enjoyed that. One of the things I was going to ask was, do you think people will be surprised by like the gore? And like the type of gore and how it's like that proper kit. It's not like they're getting the stuffing ripped out. It's just like proper goopy, you know, gore flying about. And there is some, I think, like, you know, because of the sound of things as well as the look of things and stuff. There is some like moments as well where like there is a bit where somebody like gets their like their ankle snapped and there's like a bit of bone sticking out. And like for just a microsecond before I was like, it's a puppet, I winced just for a second. And then I was like, well, look. So do you think people will be taken aback by like the effectiveness of some of the gore?
No, I don't know. I mean, the orgy of blood, I mean, believe it or not, that was like the minimum beats that I thought we had to see. Like all the injuries that I wanted to see and the characters had to have their moment and like all of the kind of deaths and things that I wanted to see. That was what I thought was kind of a minimum. And I also like didn't want to repeat myself. Mm-hmm. But I knew very early on, I was like, everything in the world is as real as possible. And the puppets, you know, they have this fabric, but everything, all the liquids, all the fire, everything else is like 100% real. And the characters are supposed to be 100% real. And so all the injuries need to be real. What's funny is all of the blood and the guts and everything you see, that's all fabric. It's actually all felt and string and yarn. It's actually all stuff that the puppets are made of on the outside. We just goop it up with blood. So like the bone you saw, that's foam. It's actually kind of what we make the puppets out of. And we're just using that same stuff. So it's kind of, you know, it's part of what's funny is that you're getting this reaction, but all you're seeing is fabric, you know, and yarn. And, I suppose
it kind of surprised me because like, I've seen other things where it's involved like puppetry and like injuries and stuff like that, and it's always kind of felt like felt and yarn and stuff like that, but like in this movie it kind of felt different.
Yeah, I've seen that where, you know, where in other films where like it's kind of like a puppet gets hacked up and then you see the stuffing, and you know, and I think there's kind of a joke there. To me, that's not to me, I was like, everything in this world is real. All the puppets, all the characters happen to be puppets. That's just kind of a thing, but we're doing everything 100% real, because I think that's more fun to watch and it's more fun to do. So that's why like we really tried hard to hide all of the mechanisms. You never see the puppeteers to the best of our ability, which is really hard to do, you know. Because my hope is that the reason you actually kind of saw that bone, and you're kind of, my hope is that you see them as characters and you actually forget that they're puppets, and so when they get an injury that you forget all that stuff. So I would never want to show stuffing or fluff, because you might get a bit of a laugh, but like you take people out of the movie, you know, you take them out of the story, in my opinion. So we really tried to like go for all of the emotion, make the injuries, like make it all real. I just think that's what I wanted to see. And it was, so it was just never a question in my mind. I was like, no, we're seeing like real blood and guts, and we're going to show as much as we can, and we're going to change it up as much as we can. And because also that's just, I don't know, I think it's way more fun.
Yeah, for sure.
But it sounds like you were surprised, huh?
Yeah. And what were, you know, what did you kind of use in terms of like to kind of group it up and stuff and make it like that more kind of like, yeah, like realistic gore, not realistic, but, you know, like more, you know, that kind of gore that you'd see in like a slasher or whatever, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we used everything. We made tons and tons of fake blood, and you have to make all kinds of different viscosity based on what it needs to do. If it needs to stick to something or squirt out or shoot out, you know, we used a lot of just like red yarn and fabric. But a lot of times with the fake blood, it's really about like how you move it. So we were trying all these different things to get like the right volume. And what finally worked is I found a pump at a hardware store that you use to empty a basement that gets flooded, or like a boat. So you're pumping this thing with two hands, and it's meant to do like a lot of volume. And so I actually took that, and we'd get like a big bucket and fill it full of fake blood. And then we would just pump this thing as hard as we could and squeeze the end. And then it would really shoot out like a ton of blood. And then the actors or the puppeteers would actually sit in a kiddie pool with big garbage bags kind of over them. And that would catch all of the, fake blood. So, you know, we did that. And then also slime was like really important. And we started out making like four or five different kinds of slime ourselves to try and find the right stuff. And nothing was right until we finally ended up buying the slime that they use in like Aliens and Star Wars. It's like a very famous kind of Hollywood slime. And this stuff called Ultra Slime was just absolutely amazing. So that's what we put on all the puppets to really goop them up. But that stuff is so sticky, you can't, and so stretchy, you have to cut it with scissors. You can't like pull it off of anything. It's unbelievably messy.
Oh dear.
Well, yeah, but we have like I had to make a special window for the camera to shoot through to protect it from all the blood and guts that were just like constantly flying. It was a lot of fun.
And as I understand, you built your own small studio off the back of a Kickstarter campaign, is that right?
Yes and no. So we started in like a 400 square foot garage, and we did our first Kickstarter off of that. And from there, we were able to rent like a larger kind of garage space that we converted into a studio. And then I ended up building, and that's where we shot most of the film in about 7 months, was all shot. You know, that's where we did like 80% of the film, I would say. And then after that, yeah, I ended up building a studio behind the house, and that's where we shot and built all the miniatures and things like that. But none of the Kickstarter money was used for the studio I'm in now. That was all self-funded. But the original Kickstarter did help pay for the studio that we rented to shoot most of the film.
And I was listening to a little bit of another interview with you, and you said something interesting. As anybody who knows anything about filming with puppets, that's quite painstaking. And you were saying that you kind of, as a kind of reward to yourself, you set up in your head what you called dessert shots. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, dessert shots or candy shots. Those are shots that are like, that you kind of make the whole film for, you know, or are kind of shots that you don't have to do necessarily, or like the film could be okay without them. And basically, I'd kind of have these shots as a motivation to be like, oh man, we're going to finally get to this shot or finally get to that shot. And some of these shots are things that I had thought about like for 3 or 4 years or even longer sometimes. So a good example is the flesh eating fish. When I very first had the idea, in the original idea, you know, Frank was going to each day would kind of clean up a little bit of the uneaten bits of brain that Zed, you know, didn't consume the night before, and he'd dump them down the well, and we would see these little fish that would just lived off of these brains bits that got dumped in the well every day. And that was an idea I had at the very beginning. And it was one of the last shots we got. And so it was just so exciting to be like, oh man, we're finally going to do the flesh eating fish. And on days where you're doing other stuff and you're kind of stuck in it, or it's just like really, really difficult, getting to one of those kind of shots that you'd been thinking about for so long was like a little reward. And it's one of the things when you're doing a project this big is you kind of, every day is really fun and it's also hard. And so finding different ways to motivate yourself and motivate the crew and kind of remind yourself of like what you're doing is really critical. And those dessert shots were always exciting. Like, oh man, we're going to do it. Oh, I can't wait.
That's really cool. I was going to talk a little bit more about the effects. You know, I was reading about how you did the thunderclouds in it. I thought that was really interesting. So could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the script called for this huge thunderstorm. And I have an amazing visual effects guy on the project who, we did 99% plus of stuff, you know, practically, but he did kind of composite things together. And so, you know, we had this miniature that of the castle and it's all lit and stuff. And we had to create this thunderstorm. And so, you know, he spent a couple days on a CG storm. And I was like, man, this is just not going to work. I was like, you know, it's only one guy. He's kind of working in his spare time. And there's just no way he can deliver something that's going to match the quality of the film. So I started researching, and there's this very old method that was used in Hollywood for maybe 50 years. I mean, it's used way back on like the Ten Commandments and stuff. And then all the way through up to films like Gremlins and Independence Day. And what it is, you create what's called a saltwater tank. So you get a big aquarium and you make this super salinated water, so lots of salt, right? And you make it as saturated as you can with salt, and you fill the bottom half of the aquarium with that. And then in the top half, you very slowly, a lot of people put plastic down. I don't think you have to do that, but you very carefully fill the top half of the aquarium with fresh water. And what that does is you then have an aquarium where the bottom half is this salt water and the top half is fresh water. And then what you can do is you can squirt a liquid into the fresh water. And for a while, when it very first comes out, it won't mix with the salt water. Mm. And so it'll just kind of bounce on top in the fresh water. And that's how you get this cloud effect. So I ended up doing that for to record the clouds for Frank and Zed to get this really cool practical thunderstorm. But it's really tricky because it takes about 4 hours to do the setup. And then you have to light something and shoot something which isn't there because the cloud doesn't appear until you squirt the liquid out. And then when you do, you have about, 6 seconds of footage that you can use. And so that's what I did to get the aquarium, to get this the cloud shots. But I'm really happy with how it turned out because it's all 100% practical. And then I handed off to my visual effects artist, and he took the practical castle miniature and the practical cloud shot, and he put it together.
All right, cool. Yeah, I was also wondering, like, also kind of still on the effects, you were saying that the film took roughly 7 months to film. How much of that was like the final, like the orgy of blood, you know, because there's a lot of stuff going on in that final section of the movie?
Yeah, the orgy of blood, I think took close to 3 months. It was tough. I mean, because we would shoot like 11 shots a day on a good day. Like our goal was 15 shots in a day, which we got like two or three times, but we, you know, and we'd average maybe, you know, 8 to 11 shots a day. And when I first took the orgy of blood to the crew, I was really worried because it's 1500 shots. Mm-hmm. And so you're like, oh my God, how the hell are we possibly going to do this? You know? But yeah, it took a long time because the other thing is like almost every shot is different. You know, we try to make every kill different. So you're not just filming something, but you have to like make the thing. You have to like make the bones. You have to figure out how is this puppet going to rip that other puppet's arm off, right? And so it's a lot of fun, but it's such a big challenge because a puppet can't even grab another puppet's arm. It can't hold another puppet's arm, you know? Like it can't do any of that stuff. So you're just kind of rigging it all together and coming up with ways in camera to make it tell the story that it's pulling something off. So it's really, you know, you really are doing special effects on every shot, but with characters that are also special effects, you know? So it's just like, it's nuts. And then because as soon as you yell cut, like all the puppets collapse, like they don't even have legs, you know? So you're trying to, it's just really, really intense. But yeah, it took about 3 months to film most of the Orgy of Blood. And then there's a lot of miniature work and kind of other effect stuff that we did in these little slices kind of afterwards.
And like, as much as that was kind of like a laborious, painstaking process, did it go relatively smoothly?
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because there's what happens is like there's shots you're like, oh, this one will be no problem, and there's other shots you're like, this one's going to be impossible. And sometimes like the impossible, like I think there's two or three shots that just worked on the first take. Like that, you know, that's not a great average out of, you know, over 1,000. But when it does, it's like, whoa, you know, and it's also like, it's fun when things start to work. I mean, that's part of it. You start the shot and you're like, it's not working, but you find little ways to make it better. And then when the shot starts to pop, it's so fun, you know? Yeah. So, and then every once in a while, you just get a shot that's like amazing. Like I remember like one of the shots that worked on the very first take is when one of the guys in the quartet has to like throw a scythe and like cut this other character's leg off, right?
Yeah.
And so, you know, you got a puppet, he can't hold anything, and you got to get him to try and throw something, that thing's got to fly through the air. And we rigged up the scythe on like two pieces of fishing line, one in the front and one in the back, and we just kind of like had the puppet kind of hold it and pretend to throw it, and then we just, you know, puppeteered the scythe with these two bits of fishing line, and it totally worked. It looked great, you know, on the very first take. And it's like so fun. You know, it's so fun seeing that. You know, I also like storyboard everything really fanatically. Like you have to, because it takes so long. So the other thing that's kind of cool is that as soon as you get a take, we would circle that storyboard in green. And so every day you're just kind of like, how many of these can we turn green? And you really have that kind of narrow focus that just, and that's part of what makes it doable. Cause you're like, all right, we're not filming the whole thing today. We're going to try and get 10 shots. What 10 shots can we do? You know? And that makes it like more manageable and fun.
Yeah, for sure. I was also reading that there was only one of each puppet. Like, how nervous were you about, like, I am an anxious person. I would have been dying of anxiety the whole time of anything going wrong, knowing that there's just one of these things for each, you know, each puppet.
Oh yeah, it's really, I was terrified of either Frank or Zed getting stepped on. Mm. And in fact, after every take, it was like, we got to get them to safety is what I always said. I was absolutely terrified because you're tangled up in all this stuff and people are tired. And I was like, man, if somebody like goes to step over something and steps on Frank's face, like we're toast the whole movie, you know? And then on top of that, in the Orgy of Blood, you know, whenever a puppet gets killed, my goal was to make their death something that you could not go back from. They're going to be killed in some way that they're absolutely destroyed. And we're filming a lot of it like out of sequence and, you know, just super, super lean, like there's no coverage whatsoever. So yeah, I was terrified both that something would happen to a puppet, and then also we would destroy a puppet. And once you do, you can't go back and get another shot. You know, so like if you watch the Orgy of Blood, you're watching the storyboards, you're watching it exactly as I wrote it, essentially, like very, very close. You know, I cut out a few little things to try and trim the length, but it's all shot for shot, exactly what I did. And a lot of times too, you know, you don't have enough rocks to build the whole castle. So you'd build one view and you shoot everything that's kind of looking that way. And you can't shoot the other stuff without building the back half of the castle, which takes a long time, you know? So a lot of times it's kind of saying like, well, if I trust the storyboards, I can shoot all the way to the parts, including where we destroy this puppet. And as long as we only destroy the front half, I can shoot the other stuff. I can rebuild the castle, do the other view where we only see the back of the puppet's head and the audience won't know he's already been destroyed. So I'm also kind of doing things like that, cheating just to try and move things more quickly, you know, but always being terrified, going like, man, if I didn't get the right stuff, like that's it. It's over. That guy's destroyed, you know? So yeah, but that's also, you know, it's also just part of it. You're like, whatever, that's how I set it up for myself. So I just got to deal with it.
Absolutely. And how happy were you when it was finally out to the world, when it premiered at the Night Streams Festival late last year?
It was so exciting. It was just absolutely thrilling. You know, I was really worried because, you know, people are seeing this film, made with a bunch of puppets. The lead characters don't talk. It's not a traditional three-act structure. It's got this crazy long battle. I mean, it's kind of like a strange film and a strange film and a strange, you know, it's got several things, several ways that it's kind of away from a typical film. And I was really worried about what's it going to be like if somebody's just watching it on their computer, you know, with the whole internet, like just ready to take their attention away, you know, will they stick with it? Like, especially with these lead characters, they don't say anything, you know, but it was like really well received. The response has been fantastic. And yeah, it's been very exciting to see people respond to the film so strongly. It's been really thrilling.
Yeah, because I mean, well, that's how I became aware, you know, like I saw like a positive audience response and some good reviews. And it was also at the Neuchâtel, I think that's how it's pronounced. I'm sorry for any Swiss listeners who have just mangled and the name of that festival, but it seemed to be well received there too.
It's gotten, you know, it's not for everybody, which is fine. I mean, why would it be, you know? But the people who like it seem to really, really like it, which is just really thrilling.
Yeah, and looking at your website, it looks like you might be doing a graphic novel prequel. Is that right?
Yeah, so I really want to tell more of the story of Frank and Zed. And tell, I would love to be in that universe a little bit more and talk about different monsters that might exist with them. But a project I'm working on now is a prequel for Frank specifically, where you get to find out the different stories of some of the people whose body parts make up Frank, you know, these different stories. And I've written two of them. They're really, really fun. And one is going to be a like kind of a comic book graphic novel. And another is going to be told in a very different way. But yeah, so I'm looking to tell five or six different stories that I think will be in different mediums. One might be, I really want to do like a radio play or like kind of a podcast audio play for one of them. Another might just be like kind of a long poem. So I'm going to kind of look to tell them in different media.
Excellent. And I also look at your website, it looks like your next film project is going to be something called Chompers. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Chompers is a monster movie I wrote a while ago, and I've got the script. It's kind of percolating, and we did some concept art. It's really fun. It's about this shape-changing monster that always camouflages itself as kind of something round, and it gets bigger and better at camouflage as it eats. So I'm not sure if I'll tackle that one next, actually, because I have another story called The Gru that I really want to do. And I'm getting close to a final draft of the script there. So I think that's where I'm most likely to head next.
Well, I'd love to talk to you more about all these things and talk to you more about Frank and Zed, but I know that you have to go. So I will let you do that. I will just ask you one more question, and that is, do you know when we are likely to see Frank and Zed over here in the UK?
You know, a lot of people are asking, yeah, when can we see Frank and Zed? When can we see Frank and Zed? So I'm working to answer that right now. There are some UK festivals that we're talking to, so we might be there in a festival capacity soon, but I am trying to get it out. It's about to play Fantasia, which is a large festival, and I'm crossing my fingers that we come out of there with a clearer picture. So unfortunately, right now, I don't know. We're working hard to get the film out to everybody.
Okay. Well, hopefully other people here in Scotland and the rest of the UK can see your film. I think it's a fun time, and I'll recommend it to people when it does make it over this way. And it just leaves me to say thank you very much for coming on the show, Jesse.
Not a problem. Thank you so much for having me, Scott.
That was my guest, Jesse, there, who I'd like to thank once again for coming on the show. I'd also like to thank you, listener, for checking out this latest episode of New Horror Express. Remember, if you like what you heard, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or basically wherever you get podcasts from. And if you could make those reviews 5 stars, that would be greatly appreciated, as otherwise the algorithm thinks we are shit. And we'd like to think we're a bit better than that. Definitely a bit better. Anyway, that's all for this time. But be sure to join me in a fortnight when I will be talking to another great guest from the world of indie horror. Until then, though, see ya.